Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live from 23 floors above downtown Billings, Montana, all across the state of Montana. This is David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We're taking phone calls all hour long. We've got Tanner Smith on the phone in Lakeside. Tanner, thanks so much for hanging with us.
Thanks for holding me over. You've had some great callers this morning, and I wanted to weigh in with this, you know, Los Angeles issue. This is part of the reason I ran for governor, because we need to look at the causation correlation of what happened and why Bozeman changed. You know, and back in the mid-90s when they decided to go the techie route, you know, this is one of the unintended consequences when you become computer heavy and tech rich. You know, I want to double down on logging, mining, ranching, ag. You know, that's the Montana identity, and these are the consequences when you go that other fork in the road.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you have to ask yourself, would a tech worker in San Francisco vote Montana values, or would a ranch hand vote Montana values, right?
And that's my point. That was the whole, one of my planks on my platform was, unless we change, you know, the Californication of Montana is going to continue. And that dovetails in with, you know, the voter integrity and stuff like that. Once they start cheating, you know, the toothpaste is out of the tube, and it's pretty hard to get put back in.
No, that's right. I agree with that. I got a message here from somebody in Bozeman. I'll get to here. Tanner, did you have anything else to add?
No, that's just it. There's a lot of great folks still in Gallatin County. You know, Dane Fletcher, he's dealing with this, and there's a lot of folks that are on our same page. It's just a matter of giving them a voice.
No, that's right. I mean, my family is still in the Gallatin Valley, and I know they're good folks, and they're not voting for this radical left agenda. So you're right about that. Mike in Bozeman says I was talking about how eventually isn't Bozeman just going to collapse under its own weight, because all of these rich out-of-staters move there because they love all of the wine bars and the coffee shops, but nobody else can afford to live in Bozeman or anywhere close. People are having to move out to Three Forks, Whitehall, Butte, but nobody can afford to live there on a wage that you can earn at a coffee shop or a wine bar. And so I'm like, what happens when there's no workers for the wine bars or the coffee shops, and all these rich out-of-staters are like, hey, I moved here to be around Montanans, and I moved here because all these wine bars and coffee shops. But now there's no Montanans here, and there's no wine, because, and now you're sitting there in Bozeman surrounded by a bunch of Californians. I mean, aren't they eventually just going to be like, okay, this is not why I came here? But Mike in Bozeman makes a good point. He says their solution to your question about what happens when these communities collapse under their own weight is what you are already seeing in Colorado and now in Big Sky. They build labor encampments down the road in less desirable areas and put these people on a bus every day to serve their lattes and wine. Very sad to see. Great point, Mike and Bozeman. That's exactly right. And it is sad to see. And these Democrats seem to just mistreat labor, don't they? Kind of odd, isn't it? Hey, we'll be right back.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble. That's Noble with a K. I'm an attorney here in Billings. You can find me online at LectureFan, LCTRFAN. Are you just tuning in during this hour? You missed what I read during the 8 o'clock hour, which is an email Tom Burnett sent out kind of summarizing all of the radical left policies in Bozeman currently. And, of course, we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about it, and Aaron has and callers have. And we covered that Bozeman DEI plan quite extensively when that first came out, and I was guest hosting a show. And of course, they've got pride flags up in the schools, and they've got, you know, pride crosswalks, and they've got the DEI plan, and they've got all this other stuff going on in Bozeman. So that's kind of what is generating a lot of the conversation. If you weren't tuning in, and if you weren't doing what I do, which is, regardless of your radio station, open up that Montana Talks app on your phone and click the listen live button. But let's go to Tom in Bozeman. Tom, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey David. Lived in Billings for over 20 years, but I've been in Bozeman for about 17 years, and things have gotten pretty strange up here. You know, the liberals will come in and with the more money than brains and run for city council and or city commission, run for school board. A few years ago, a girl at the instance of her mother, who's a professor at MSU, said that Fellowship of Christian Athletes was a hate group because on our website it says that we believe a marriage is between a man and a woman, and they said that that was hate speech. So FCA was asked to leave the campus. Crazy stuff going on here. The city council, city commission is full of liberals. When one leaves, they appoint another one. There doesn't seem to be a lot of elections going on. When elections happen, for school board, for example, they're in June, and, you know, no one pays any attention to them. I don't know why they're not in November, you know, like ordinary elections. Plus the college, you know, every college is a hotbed of liberal thought and liberalism, and they motivate their students to, you know, break electoral law.
That's right. That's right.
Years ago, I was standing in line in a presidential election, and there was a kid there who was a freshman at MSU, and I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "Colorado." I said, "How long you been here?" You know, about 6 or 7 weeks. I says, "Wait a minute. You know, under Montana law, you know, a residence is where your habitation is fixed, and where you, when you're absent, you have the intention of returning." He said, "You know, Christmas vacation, are you going back to Colorado?" "Of course. Next summer, going back to Colorado." I said, "Well, then you should be voting absentee in Colorado." "No, my professor said that I could come down here and vote and it'd be okay." That's why the liberals like same-day voting and registration so much, because we have no way of checking whether or not, you know, they've gotten a driver's license or whether or not they've done the other things which reflect indicia of domicile. Actually, the statute should read domicile, because domicile is habitation with an intent to remain there, where residence is merely habitation. So the statute is sloppily drafted in that regard. But
it does but Tom, you're right though, that you cannot be here as a college student and think in your own mind that you're going to go back to your home state at the end of the year and consider yourself a Montana resident.
Right.
And not only are the professors giving them bad information, I know for a fact that these leftist groups like MontPerg and these other leftist groups out there are going up to these college students on campus and saying, "Hey, have you been in Montana for 30 days? And they say, "Yeah, right. I've been here for 30 days. And they say, "Oh, well, you should register to vote," and vote. And they say, no, these are the students then telling MontPerg and these other leftist orgs, "No, I can't register here in Montana. I'm a resident of Colorado or California. I'm going to go home. I'm going home at the end of the year." "Nope, that doesn't," then at MontPerg, "Nope, that doesn't matter. You can still register to vote," which is illegal voter registration and voting going on in Bozeman and Missoula.
This is one of the arguments that we made last year on the new election laws that were passed by our legislature, show identification, do away with same-day voting and registration. And, of course, it's just to prevent, you know, these type of things. I mean, Thurgood Marshall on the Tennessee case back in the 70s, he said 30 days is a reasonable period to cut off registration to allow, you know, local registration officials to check to see whether you're a qualified, you know, domiciliary of the state to be able to
Tom, one question before I let you go here. And I agree. I agree with 30 days. And of course, in Montana, it was a 30-day registration deadline all the way up until 2005. So I definitely think 30 days is right. But Tom, this whole conversation raises the question: when are you going to run for Bozeman City Commission?
I'm old, and I'm tired.
Fair enough. Well, Tom, we got some other callers.
I'm a good Republican, so all right.
Good. We want you to run, Tom. We want you to run. So keep that in mind. We're up against the break. I was going to try to fit in Frank in Park City, Ken in Billings, Grandpa Lou in Billings. We're going to get to you three first thing right after this break. David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
Live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble in for Aaron Flint on this Friday, July 26th, doing nothing but taking phone calls all hour long. Let's go to Frank in Park City. Frank, thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. I see with all the crises going on that the border crisis is kind of getting shuffled to the back here, and I just wonder, I see where there's another, but maybe 10,000 headed towards the, coming through Mexico, headed to the United States right now.
Another caravan forming, trying to make it to the border before Trump takes office.
And it looks like we're bleeding out, and nobody is, we're standing there watching it. And I would just like to put forth, so I've been thinking about this, about a possible solution, and I'd like to know what you think about it. Now, it's three steps, real quickly. Cut the border. That has to be done completely. I mean, whatever it takes, send the National Guard down there. Don't let anybody across that border at all, except those with visas and passports and so forth, and carry on normal business that way. We have to close it for a minimum of 6 months, which will give us time to set up a legal immigration system. And what we can do is, I know there's probably, I think there's 10 million illegals in the country right now.
At a bare minimum, probably 30 million, 40 million in reality.
Okay. Whatever it is, offer these illegals one chance to gain entry into this country legally. But they first must return to Mexico. And as they pass through the border on the way through, each person will receive a dated document that qualifies them to apply for legal entry. And the idea is the first come, first serve. And the failure to comply with any return order at all means that these people are forbidden to come into the country ever again. There's no way that they can ever enter the country. At least the ones that have a document specifying the date, they have a chance to get in. And all those that have to be rounded up or forced to return, and we know that there's going to be a lot of those because we know that there's a lot of terrorists and so forth and traffickers and on that are not going to voluntarily come back to the border. We know that. But the idea is to self-deport people who, in other words, the people that do self-deport are the ones we can say, these people really do want to be here and they want to do it legally. And that would make us look like that we're being reasonable. We're not a hostile country to these people. We want, all we want is for them to do it legally. And again, they'd be encouraged to self-deport, and that would reduce our efforts to have to go and drag them back. And then the third point was that when all the illegals have been returned to Mexico, that they will be prepared to set a quota, whatever, I don't know what that quota would be, 1,000 a day or whatever is reasonable, whatever it was before. And this program would, again, it would offer several advantages, and that it would allow us to see who that we really do want in this country, and it will prove who's truly interested in coming here illegally, and it will prove that we are a humane country by not closing the border permanently. And all the rest, the people, we can call them criminals. That's what they are, and they should be treated as criminals and prosecuted vigorously as they deserve. And this could work if we have the guts to implement it. That is, but if we don't shut the border and just forget the whole thing, it's over. Let's just go about our business and wait for the end to come, because it's completely ridiculous that people can just keep coming in with basically unvetted. And that's all I really have to say.
Thank you so much for the call. Couple of thoughts. One, I think that people that have come here illegally, that they should have to go back to their home, go home, and then they can apply here legally, but they have to get in back of the line. And I don't know if what you're proposing there was that they would be in the back of the line, but otherwise, if you were to allow the people that are here illegally right now to like apply for legal entry into the United States, and jump ahead of the line, then you're rewarding that illegal behavior and you're punishing the people from around the world that are waiting in line legally to try to get into the United States. So they need to go to the back of the line. I guess that would be my first thought. Let's try to sneak in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Ken in Billings. Ken, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. So, you know, you talked about the why we didn't go over when those 32 Americans were killed. Because we have a democratic communist government that's on the take, and they wouldn't want to upset the amount of money that they're getting from these countries that want to destroy us. But they think that they're above everything, and they don't realize that, you know, if these big people like Hamas or China or somebody comes over here, those people in the government aren't going to live anyway. They're going to kill them all, you know. So what do they think they are? They think, you know, gravy train?
Right.
I mean, and then you got those people in the Congress, the squad. I mean, them ragheads, they're dictating to the president and everybody else over there, or so-called president, they should say, that, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. You know, these people, they're giving us money, so why should we upset the apple cart?
Right.
I think the whole Democratic Party is technically on the take from all of these people, like the Chinese, the Putin, and Iran.
Well, so I mean, Ken, what do you think of this though? Okay, because another explanation for why the Biden administration did nothing to revenge the 32 Americans killed by Hamas and did nothing to retrieve the American hostages captured by Hamas, isn't it just consistent with everything else Biden has done? Because remember, Biden left behind American citizens in Afghanistan and told them, hey, you're on your own. Biden refused to do anything to help Americans who got caught in Ukraine during the Russian invasion. Biden has really done a big change in U.S. policy to where it used to be that if you're an American citizen and you get into a difficult spot overseas, you used to be able to count on the U.S. government to try to help you and to try to come get you. Biden has changed all that to where now they say, well, we told you to leave that area, and then you didn't leave, and so now you're not our responsibility. And I think that's egregious and should be a big primary campaign issue, because if the U.S. government is not going to come help American citizens who get into difficult spots overseas, then why do we have a U.S. government in the first place?
That's right. You're 100% correct. Because, like I said, they're on the take. Because, you know, when they send this money to Ukraine over there, I'm sure, you know, if they send them $5 million, I'll guarantee you there's got to be $2 million that gets a kickback right back to the government, our government. You know,
right?
That's where Biden. That's where you figure Biden is worth so much money, and now you got, you know, Tester. Where did he get all his money from? He's on the take too.
Right, especially, I mean, you look at these U.S. Senate, U.S. Senator salaries, it's $174,000 for a salary for a U.S. senator. $174,000. Now, that's actually quite a, that's a lot of money, right? That's a good salary, especially if you're living in Montana, for example. But if you're a U.S. senator and you have to maintain a residence in D.C. and you keep your Montana residence and you've got two houses now and you've got to deal with the high living costs of, frankly, D.C. and, frankly, Montana as well, okay, then it becomes difficult to really even meet your expenses, and especially when you're dealing with Biden tester inflation, it becomes difficult to meet your expenses with a $174,000 salary for a U.S. senator. And then this is the crazy thing, right? So U.S. senators are voting on appropriation bills worth trillions of dollars, trillions and trillions of dollars. U.S. senators have the power to appropriate and decide where trillions and trillions of dollars go, okay? And then they've also got in their campaign accounts something like $50 million, like John Tester's got, okay? John Tester has raised like $50 million, okay? And so he's sitting there getting a $174,000 salary, right? So, and he's in D.C. He's one of the most powerful men in D.C., getting a piddly little 174K salary. And you've got millions and millions and millions of dollars in campaign funds swashing around D.C. And you've got trillions and trillions in government spending washing around D.C. And you start to wonder and start to ask yourself, you know, this is basically a perfect recipe to encourage corruption, to encourage bribery. Now, there's a couple of solutions to that, right? One would be to raise the salary of a U.S. senator so that they wouldn't basically be struggling to survive and then be tempted with all of this corruption. There's a better solution, which is to cut spending at the federal government level, right? Because nobody's going to spend $50 million on a U.S. Senate race if that senator is not going to be one of the 100 people that gets to decide where like $6 or $7 or $8 trillion goes. If instead they were only instead of, you know, $6 or $7 trillion a year in spending, instead if they were only appropriating, you know, $1 trillion or $2 trillion, and most of that was going to constitutional initiatives like the U.S. military, for example, then there's not as big of an incentive to spend $50 million on a Senate race, because the senator's not going to have the ability to control as much money anymore. And so, and there's also so many other benefits to cutting federal spending. Number one, you increase freedom, right? The less money the federal government has, the less money they have to promulgate regulations and enforce regulations and do everything else. So you massively cut spending, you immediately increase the levels of freedom in this country, you reduce the levels of corruption, you reduce inflation, you increase economic growth. This is all economics 101, folks. Anybody that's been to the University of Montana in Missoula and taken Econ 101 knows all this. So it's amazing anybody would consider voting for John Tester, but here we are. We'll be right back.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
The National Public Lands Council and National Cattlemen's Beef Association are applauding the House of Representatives for passing the Department of Interior Appropriations Act of 2025. The group say the bill protects the rights of land grazing permittees and reels in overreaching BLM regulations. It also addresses Endangered Species Act challenges, defends local communities against land grabs under the Antiquities Act, and recognizes the important role of ranchers, they say, which are America's original conservationists in the stewardship of the nation's public lands.
Join the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. NCBA is the oldest and largest national cattle industry organization working to defend your interests in Washington, D.C. And there are big benefits to being a member. You get news you can use in the National Cattlemen, email updates in the NCBA Beef Bulletin, plus big discounts only for NCBA members. Join by calling 866-233-3872 or online at ncba.org.
A district court judge in the state of Massachusetts has upheld Massachusetts' Q3 pork law, rejecting an industry-backed attempt to block its enforcement. The law, known as the Prevention of Farm Animal Cruelty Act, is banning the sale of pork from pigs kept in confined spaces. The decision's key points include the rejection of federal presumption. The judge dismissed arguments that the Federal Meat Inspection Act preempted the state law. I'm Lane Northlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, it's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. Got some messages here to read. Also, we got an audio message from Aaron Flint sent in. Travis, go ahead and give me the sign whenever you're ready to play that special message from Aaron Flint. Go ahead.
Hey, David, man, thanks for covering down on the show. As always, I am here set up at Meadow Lake Golf Course in Columbia Falls. Beautiful morning in the Flathead Valley. A cool breeze came through yesterday afternoon, got rid of the smoke, got rid of the hot air. So it's just a beautiful morning in the Flathead. Got to catch up with Governor Greg Gianforte just a few minutes ago. Hey, I want to give a heads up to our friends in Great Falls. This weekend, Saturday night, I'll be at the Fusion Fights in Great Falls, along with our friends from Americans for Prosperity Montana. And then Sunday morning, come see us. We're going to be at Tracy's Restaurant. This is going to be an event paid for by Americans for Prosperity Montana. We're going to be buying a bunch of gift cards to hand out to you to help you fight inflation. So 10:30 to 12:30, Sunday morning, Great Falls. Come see us. I'll be set up outside of Tracy's Restaurant. We'll have some gift cards for you to help you fight inflation, thanks to our friends at Americans for Prosperity Montana.
All right, I got a couple of messages here. Actually, I got four messages here. I'm gonna read all of them and respond to all of them. But I first want to go to Frank in Evergreen. But before I want to do that, Ralph in Three Forks sent a message that I really want to address right away to clarify something. So Ralph says, "Y'all are really insulting me. I am one of those out-of-staters and am a strong constitutionalist. I know many very left, multi-generational natives. Testy Tester is a longtime communist senator." Ralph, in Three Forks, we're not talking about you. We're not talking about out-of-staters that come in here and vote Republican or vote constitutionalist. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about, and you're right, there's plenty of multi-generational Montanans that vote left. So, yeah, no question about that, Ralph. And sorry if there was misconfusion, and sorry if you felt insulted because you didn't know we were not actually talking about you. All right, let's go to Frank in Evergreen. Frank, thanks so much for calling.
Hi, David. Hey, thank you. I wanted to talk about the State of the Union speech that Biden gave. You know, it definitely was recorded. You could see when he's staring straight at the camera, he's actually, his eyes is elevated a little bit because he was reading a teleprompter all off. So he's just reading what he typed from his woke word processor. You know, it was very, very clunky speech, if you ask me. But to me, it was a speech similar to the last chapter of Cervantes' Don Quixote, The Man from La Mancha, and where towards the end, he knows he's been a failure all his life. He struggles around Spain on a donkey, you know, tilting his staff towards giants, which were actually windmills, and he's got dementia. And in the end, he's got to come down with a sickness. He's got a fever. So then he goes off and dies, you know. But you know, it's just the similarity there. The donkey he was on, you know. It's that's the Democrat Party. He's just riding it all into the sunset, you know. It's really it's a lost cause, you know.
Yeah, well, Frank, it's been too long since I've seen Don Quixote for me to picture that in my mind. But I'm sure you're right about that. Did you have anything else before I let you go?
Oh, I think it's too bad I didn't get to hear Tanner Smith at the top of the hour there. Kind of the engineer had to fix something, but it was just like silence.
Well, Frank,
10 minutes here at KJJR.
Okay, so, well, Frank, I don't know if you've got an iPhone or if you've got an Android phone or either one, but you ought to download the Montana Talks app, and you can go in there and listen to any hours you missed. And that's what I do, because obviously I've got a day job, and so I oftentimes will miss, you know, the 8 o'clock and the 9 o'clock hour, but I'll listen to those after work on the app.
I will do. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, Frank. Appreciate the phone call. Hey, open phones. If you guys want to call in right now, we'll get you on before the end of the show. We've got no callers on the line. So it's 406-294-0970. I wanted to get to the rest of these messages. Right on, John in Bozeman says, David, I deliver food for Uber 12 hours a day to make ends meet. What I am starting to notice is robots are gaining strength serving food. Yeah. I've noticed the same thing, right on, John. Thanks so much for the message. We got one from Greg in Big Fork. Greg says, several points going against Tanner Smith. And if you missed it, Tanner Smith was basically saying the reason Bozeman has gone so far left is because the state has obsessively tried to generate a high-tech hub in Bozeman, and so you get all of these high-tech workers coming out of places like Silicon Valley, and then you wonder why Bozeman went left. That was, I think, Tanner Smith's point, if I paraphrase that correctly. So Greg says, points going against Tanner Smith, we need to have more conservatives in the technical world and technology to fight fire with fire. Second point is we need more attention to these constitutional initiatives like 127 and 128. That, I agree with that, Greg. That's a good point. Why is there not much campaigning out against this cover-up of ranked choice and against baby slaughtering? Where are the Montana groups, other than Aaron Flint and Montana Families, out actually telling / campaigning who these judges are? No, I mean, great point, Greg. I mean, I agree with you that we ought to have better campaigns going against those constitutional initiatives. The reality is, you know, Greg and Big Fork, is that these leftists, they donate their money. They donate their money to these leftist groups. And so you've got a bunch of leftist groups that are pouring millions and millions and millions of dollars into promoting those CIs. And the conservatives don't. I mean, we just don't donate our money to conservative organizations the same way the left does. And so you've got basically a one-sided campaign, as far as I can tell, where you've got the left pouring millions of dollars in to support those campaigns, and there's really no organized effort against them. There should be. Maybe I ought to start a pack or a group or whatever, and if people want to fight against those, we'll take donations and fight against it. I don't know. It's a good point, though. It would be better if we did have that. Let's go to Lee in Kalispell. Lee, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was wondering why there's no talk on the YouTube picture of the woman that was behind Trump when he got shot. She basically had no reaction whatsoever to the shots, and she just kind of sat and kept filming Trump all during the fiasco, or all during the confusion. Most people, when you hear shots, you jump, eyes get big, whatever, but she has none. And it turns out that they identified her as the FBI assistant director, and nobody's talking about that.
Is that right? I haven't seen that story. Where did you? Is there a news report that you're referencing?
It's on YouTube. It's YouTubers had it. You could see where she just sat there. In fact, it kind of looked like she may have. She looked over towards where the shooter was and held up her sign a little bit, and then she just stared with her
What do you think it means?
Well, I'm kind of curious. It's just kind of weird that she would have no reaction. It's almost like she knew that the shots were coming and she wasn't going to get shot at, and so she didn't it was not a surprise to her that there were some bullets flying around, you know.
That is weird. That is weird. Lee, thanks so much for the call. I'll have to look into that because I'm not familiar with it. I want to get to some more callers as promised before the end of the show. We've got Diane in Troy. Diane, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. I would like to have people think, instead of the billions of dollars and the millions of people, I'd like to think about my house. I don't have a fence, but I lock the door I think about the people who have problems, and I wish I could help them, but I don't leave my door unlocked and let them come in and root around in my refrigerator and sleep in my bed.
Right, but if somebody comes and knocks on your door and they say, "I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, can you help me?" What are you going to do?
Probably would give them something.
Exactly, yep.
I don't think that I would open the door. I have had that experience. And you don't let people in because you don't know who they are.
Right.
But you say, "Okay, have a seat. I'll prepare you something, and I'll put it on the porch, and you can go get it."
No, that's right.
In today's world, you just can't help people the way you'd like to.
No, because you've got an obligation to your family to keep yourself safe too, right? So you can't put yourself at risk. AW in Bozeman, we'll get to you right after this. Goes.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're on the last segment, your last chance to get on the air. Let's do lightning round of callers. Let's go to AW in Bozeman. AW, thanks for calling.
Hey there, good morning, great show. You do a great job filling in for Aaron.
Thank you.
That last caller about the Secret Service agent, he was saying that it was a Secret Service agent behind Trump filming. Her reaction to the shooting was strange, but that was debunked. She physically looked like a person that was part of the Secret Service, but she was not. So I just wanted to call in and fact check that one real quick, because that was on the internet a lot, and she was not a Secret Service agent.
Well, thank you for the fact check, AW. Good to know. We got to keep each other honest, because we can't let each other go around spreading stuff that's not true, because then it doesn't help our cause.
Correct. Anyway, vote Republican.
Amen to that. Thank you so much for the call. Looks like we've got some other callers that Travis is talking to. We'll get you guys on here shortly. In the meantime, let me get through a couple more messages. Andy in Whitefish says, ditto in Whitefish, workforce housing and all that crap. Thank you, Andy. The Menace from Ennis says, Trump needs to close the border, deport the illegals, then build the wall, revamp the visa program, education, work, and visitor. We need to stop allowing people born in USA as automatic citizenship. People are coming in, having children here, then they stay because they are parents of the child who's then automatically an American citizen. Menace from Ennis also says, Mr. Noble, we agree. Less money to government equals more power to the people. Dennis in Bozeman says, why can't Congress Zoom their sessions and be required to stay in their state? This would cut down on corruption and would make lobbying more difficult to bribe Congress. Just my humble opinion. Interesting, Dennis. Haven't ever thought of that idea. Oh, we got Grandpa Lou back. Grandpa Lou, I thought we lost you there. Thanks so much for calling back in.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I had to answer the other line.
Oh, you're good.
Worked. So, hey, I just want to remind everybody on Red Friday and remember all our troops that are deployed and all that have served. And there's two quick points I want to make. You know, the Montana Supreme Court ruled the other day. They overruled our Secretary of State. All these goofy petitions that they're trying to get for killing babies and stuff, they overturned her and said that they could count
inactive voters.
Inactive voters.
Right.
So
people that we don't know, people that we don't know if they've moved, if they've died, yep. We don't know, right?
Yep. So your vote does matter. So we need to take control of our state Supreme Court. And then the Supreme Court of the United States ruled, you know, that burning the American flag is protected by your First Amendment. The But what's not protected is that it's illegal to vandalize and destroy the American flag and statues on private or federal property. You know, that pisses me off. Look how many January 6th prisoners are being held and tortured every day for just walking through the Capitol and doing absolutely nothing and just taking pictures and selfies. They've been in prison for almost 4 years with no charges, no attorneys, no bail. What the Adam Schiff is going on here, you know? Threat to democracy? You can kiss my rosy red behind. You better wake up, America. Thank you very much.
Well said.
What a
call from Grandpa Lou in Billings. Really, really great call. Thank you so much. Let's try to rush in some more calls. We got a couple of minutes left. We got Dave in Wolf Point on the phones. Dave, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Dave, for taking my call here. I just wanted to mention, you know, Giggle Terrace, who they're running through. I call her Giggly. But anyway, back in March 19th of 2014, it's a Billings paper. It's talking about Harry Reid. John Bollinger was running for Democratic senator, I think. But Harry Reid called him up and told him in last November, it was, Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid called me and told me to drop out of the Senate race because they had already chosen their candidate. Doesn't that sound familiar with what Schumer and them are doing now?
Wow, that does sound familiar.
So I just think, you know, she's so incapable of doing it, and people's got to start thinking, not voting. Don't let people tell you to vote if you don't know what's going on.
So, Dave, I'm curious, though, because I frankly don't see the benefit to Democrats of having Kamala Harris instead of Joe Biden, because Kamala Harris, she's terrible, and she's very unlikable. So what do you think is really going
on? She's worthless. I mean, they're lying about everything. And, you know, I can't believe how they can outright lie on TV about situations. And she is the border czar. We all know that. She failed. She can't handle it. So anyway, I'd say Democrats, you start thinking about what you want in life, you know, and vote for the right party. The Conservative Party, Republican. But anyway, I wanted to bring that about Bollinger and Harry Reid.
Good. We're at the end of the show. Thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate you calling in. Honored and privileged to be here. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for the calls. Thank you for the messages. If you want more of David Noble, you can find me online at LectureFan, LCTRFAN. We'll see you next time.